You made it. You made it here. Anyone have one of those weeks that you're just like, I feel like we did Monday over and over and over again? Anyone there with me? Good. It's so good to have a Sabbath where we get to just come together and just communally breathe again. It's such a fabulous opportunity we have the privilege of doing every week. We're going to do a teaching entitled, what is the title of the sermon? Oh, good. Yes. I'm speaking at services today, and so my mind is kind of bouncing back and forth, so work with me here. The Christ Path and Turning the Other Cheek. That's what we'll talk about. How's that sound? Good. Let's pray. God, I want to thank you, praise you for just community. Thank you for space where we can come together. Thank you for the beautiful, strong female voices we have in this church, and thank you that they could share that this morning. Lord, please bless and guide this discussion over what it means to be a disruptive church. Amen. We've been going through the series, and we understand that to be a true follower of Christ means you step into a really disruptive message that could potentially flip everything upside down. How you view economics, politics, religion, it all is flipped upside down. And so, Paul, we're almost done with the series, by the way. Have you enjoyed the series? Has it been disruptive enough for you? I had a couple of you call me throughout the series, and you were like, Tony, my brain hurts. Like, there's a lot of change right now, and I don't know what to do with all the furniture, but I'm with you. It's exciting. It's disruptive. What do I do? And so just know that we are almost finished with the book of Acts. We're going to step into the book of Psalm pretty soon, which is a fabulous study in itself. But right now, Paul is about to enter into the last couple chapters of this book of his life, actually. He's about to go back to Jerusalem. And when he goes back to Jerusalem, you have to understand something. For Jerusalem, the people there, Paul was a hero. Paul was a hero before he became a Christian. Paul was like the name that you kind of spoke and everyone said, oh, Paul. Paul was the guy that he was going out and he was taking care of those disruptive Christians. And you held Paul as this hero of the Pharisee tribe. Paul now is going back there, but he's changed. He's going back there to a group of people who no longer see Paul as a hero. He's actually the antagonist in their story. Paul, for him, everything has changed. He had a moment where the people he was persecuting the most, they become not his enemy anymore, but his friends, his own community. For him, for this to happen, Paul had to have a moment of new sight. How many of you have had an experience where you thought you understood this evil person that you just can't stand at work? Go on. Tell me more. You were struggling with this person. This person has been an enemy to you. And then all of a sudden, they'll share something that just takes all the toxic energy you had toward them away. You're just like, oh. You know what to do with it? When I was a teacher, I was doing so well my first 2 years. I fit into teaching like a glove. It was so good. It fit perfectly. And I'm not talking like O.J. Simpson glove. You didn't have to try to make it fit. It just fit. Yep. Went there. It fit, and it was so good. For 2 years, everything was going perfectly. I didn't have a troubled student in my classroom. And then year three hit. And I had this one kid in my class that made me question my religion every single day, question my calling as a teacher every single day. This kid, I would spend hours prepping for class, and this is what this kid would do in the back. He would either be sleeping or he'd be stuffing pencils or something up his nose, whatever he could to disrupt the class. This kid, he failed every quiz I gave, which meant he failed most of his tests, all because he didn't do any of his homework. This kid frustrated me. Teachers, that kid, that's who I had. And so I gave him chance after chance after chance, and this kid blew it over and over again. He took my grace, and he just kind of threw it off. And finally I said, I'm done with you. Not to his face, of course. That would be mean. But I thought it, and I acted on it. No longer am I spending any more time with this little punk. He kept failing, and he started to go behind in all of his other classes. And I thought, you know what? I got to reach out to Mom. It's part of the protocol. I call Mom. Does Mom answer? No. Over and over and over again. I call Mom. I leave message after message. Nothing. And I decide this. I'm going to hunt you down, Mama. I'm going to find you. And so I waited after school. I'm almost picturing myself like behind bushes, but I wasn't. I stood there by the door and I waited. And I watched Mom drive up and I booked it. And I got up to the window. I said, "Hi, Mom. I'd like to meet with you and your son at your earliest convenience." She said, "Okay." I said, "How's tomorrow look?" "Oh, it's kind of serious, huh?" I said, "Yeah, it's kind of serious." "Okay, I'll make that work." I said, "How about 3:45, my office?" "Okay, I'll be there." 3:45, her son and I are waiting in my office. Is Mom there? No. I'm beginning to think, Mom is the reason. He's taking after Mom. I'm waiting, 10, 15, 20 minutes. Finally, Mom shows up. She's looking haggard. She sits down. I give her the nice seat. And I start to share. I said, "Mom, here's what's going on. Your kid, he's not doing his homework. He's sleeping in class. This. And I pour it all out. I said, "Here's the things I've been trying to do to help your son. Here are his grades." Mom's head goes down. I'm kind of watching. I'm only 25 years old. And I'm watching. And all of a sudden, I see her head start bobbing. And she starts weeping louder and louder and louder. And in my mind, I'm like, whoa. I wasn't trained for this. What do you do when a mother's breaking down right in your office? Do you just like, "It's okay"? What do you do? I watch the son starts crying. He goes over and puts his arms around Mom and says, "Mom, we're going to be okay. We're going to be okay." And I realize something bigger is going on here. So I wait. Mom finally, what seems like an eternity, looks up. Her makeup's all smeared. And she said, "I'm so sorry. I am an absolute failure as a mother." She said, "My husband left 1.5 years ago. He left me with nothing. We have nothing. And now we live in my car. My 3 sons and I, we've been living in the car. And I barely have enough money for gas. We're living off of Taco Bell and Burger King and McDonald's. And at night, in the cold of Colorado winter, I'm praying to God that I have enough gasoline that will keep my car warm so that my kids don't freeze. I can't get my kids to the library. And when I do finally get them to the library to use the internet to do your assignments, it's not very fast, and they'd never quite get it done. I can't even buy paper right now." It's been over 10 years, and I still get emotional when I think about it, because what happened is I had new sight given to me. And I had a chance now to do things a little differently. And so with this boy, I poured every ounce of energy I had into him. I knew his story. My enemy, this little punk, had now become someone that I saw as another human being that needed my help. And I and the rest of the teaching staff, we got together. We got enough money for 4 months in these hotel rooms for them. And that was enough for her to begin saving up a little bit. She was able to get an apartment. Someone was able to get her a new job. We poured our lives into this person that we first thought of as an enemy. We were given new sight. And that's what happens on the Christ journey. Your enemies, when you have the opportunity and you've been blinded and you open your eyes again, everything changes, doesn't it? Everything changes. Paul is going to Jerusalem, just like Jesus. Paul's going there knowing he is going to die. Paul walks the Christ path. Watch all the similarities between Paul and Jesus. Paul gets to Jerusalem, just like Jesus did. And watch this now. He is betrayed and handed over by the very people he used to belong to. He's handed over by his own tribe. It's one thing if Rome chooses to put you in custody, chooses to persecute, but it's another thing when your own people, your own family turns on you. This happens to both Jesus and Paul. They're flogged and beaten. We kind of make light of this now because we've seen all of the, you know, we've gone to the passion place. And it looks kind of bad, but the reality is you're not seeing a lot of blood. It's not as gory. You could see what Rome did to people when they flogged and beat them. You have to understand, they are bringing them within inches of their life. There's not much flesh left on your back. It's ugly. Jesus takes the brunt of this. Paul, he gets this, but it's not nearly as bad. He claims citizenship, luckily. But both are beaten. Both are flogged. Both are labeled as disruptors. In Acts 24, they say, "We have found this man to be a troublemaker, stirring up riots among the Jews all over the world. He's the ringleader of the Nazarene sect and even tried to desecrate the temple. So we seized him." In Matthew, they'll speak of Jesus this way in chapter 26. "He's spoken blasphemy. Why do we even need a witness? This man must die." Both of them, when they get to Jerusalem, they are accused of being disruptors of the religious system. Both of them are held in judgment by the higher courts. I need you to understand something. This is not normal. If Rome finds that you are a disruptor, you know what they do with you? Historically, you're dead. You don't get trials, especially if you're a foreigner. You don't get trials. Jesus and Paul, watch this now, they're taken to one court system, then they're taken to another and another, because Rome, which is the beastly, violent empire, finds them innocent. Who is it that is looking for the scapegoat? Who is it calling for violence? God's chosen people. Isn't it interesting when we as a church, we begin calling out for blood, when we begin asking for revenge, when we end up in those footsteps, understand we're not walking in the steps of Christ. We're following the beastly empire path. May we never choose that direction. Lastly, both are murdered by Rome. Jesus is crucified on a cross like a common thief and murderer. Paul, we're told later, 2 Timothy, the idea here, the Christian idea, you won't find it in Scripture, by the way, how Paul died. But historically, we believe that Paul's beheaded there in Rome under Nero. Both men are murdered there by Rome. But here's the beauty. Both men, Jesus and Paul, what they do here is just so compelling. They respond not with hate, not with anger, not with vengeance. We see them respond with, "Father, forgive them, they know not what they do." They respond with love. Both. And this was the challenge for the early church in 100 AD. How do you respond when your persecutors, your oppressors are doing these things? What action do we take? Do we take any at all? What do we do? And so Jesus gave this really interesting sermon on the Mount. And in this moment, he actually takes on what Moses was doing. Do you remember Moses on the sermon on the mountaintop? What does he do there? Charlton Heston? Yeah, I like that. I said that and you're like, "Oh, okay, got it." I understand now. He brings the Ten Commandments forth and he shares with them this new reality, how to be in the world, how the kingdom of heaven should look like. And he shares this message and it's totally earth-shaking for them at that time. Jesus comes along on another mountain and he begins to expand on what this all meant. He actually goes into the heart of the law. And so Jesus begins to share this. And at the end, the last 6-7 verses, Jesus says this. He brings up 2 points. Number 1, how to respond to your enemy. And 2, He commands us to love. And he'll go back. He says, hey, you remember that? Remember that thing that we keep quoting in Exodus? It says this about the people we disagree with, our enemies. It says, injury, if someone injures you, life for life, eye for an eye, tooth for a tooth, hand for a hand, foot for a foot. You people viewing right now, Exodus 21, 23 through 25. That's where this comes from. Jesus says, remember that? That's not actually what we're called to do. He contradicts it. He says, look at Leviticus 19, 18. It says this, do not seek revenge or bear a grudge against anyone, say it with me, among your people. But love your neighbors yourself, I am the Lord. How many of you find that when you're in a disagreement with someone, and it's someone you like, and you kind of have the same ideas most of the time, you can get through that argument? Anyone with me on that one? Yeah, if you and your friend, who you're basically the same person, but if you agree on, or if you disagree on one little thing, it's not the end of the world, is it? In the end, you're like, well, it's okay. You can like Justin Bieber all you want. Whatever it is, whatever the disagreement is, you're okay. But the person who you consider an enemy, the person you disagree with most, now that's different, isn't it? Because that person's not your neighbor. Because according to Levitical law, your neighbor, the person among you, is another Jew. It's a person from your tribe. So Jesus, he teases out a little bit. He says, you know what? Who is your neighbor? And Jesus says, your neighbor's not just another Jewish person. Your neighbor is also your enemy. That kind of language will get you crucified, won't it? Your neighbor is also the terrorist seeking your life. Your neighbor is the person you are angry at the most, the person you have the least in common with. That's your neighbor. And so then he goes into, what does it look like to be a good neighbor? If anyone slaps you on the right cheek, turn to them your other. How many of you have heard this before? It's a good verse. We take this very literally as people, but I've actually never seen anyone do it. Are we to take this literally? And by the way, who is going around slapping everybody? This actually meant something really interesting for these people at this time period. Watch this. Your left hand, hold it up. I solemnly swear to give Tony Wirth all my money. I'm just joking. This is your left hand. This left hand is what you use to clean yourself. When you go to the bathroom, this hand, you're all looking at your hand now. Huh, you can put them down. It's not the hand that you use to hit someone with. Let's just say that much. It's not the hand you shake hands with people with. You all got me on this? This is the hand of power, your right hand. Your right hand is what you would do business with when you're shaking hands. I agree on this. This is other business. Power. This is what you would use if you were to hit someone. You would use this hand. This is the hand of power. Now, there's something interesting here. This is how I would hit someone if they were lower than me. You use the back of the hand. The back hand. I'm going to give that boy my back of my hand. He's going to read my hand. I've heard some of you talk. And that's why I run from you every Sabbath. The back of the hand is used on a slave, on someone lower than yourself. Now, if I want to hit someone who is of the same stature as me, I would punch you. We are equals. I might even open up my hand like this and slap you like that. We're equals. So watch me now. Nathan, come on up front. So let's say this. Nathan, you're going to be the slave master. Nathan has been looking forward to slapping me his whole life. So I want you to see this for a moment. I've been working in the field, slaving away, and my master sees me, and I do something he doesn't like. He wants to make an example of me, so he's going to hit me with the back of his right hand. Watch what happens. Real soft, real don't. Good. You were very kind. He hits me on the right cheek, right? Hits me on the right cheek. Jesus says, once someone hits you on the right cheek, turn the other cheek. turn to the left. Now, Nathan, I want you to try to hit me with your right hand with the back of it. Yeah, turn it Gumby style. Okay, good. Yeah, it's not going to work. Good. So what you just saw there is it's probably not going to work out quite right, is it? For Nathan to hit me, he's going to have to now use his fist. Ah, so watch this. In a field where the master has just slapped you, you are lower than me, you turn the other cheek, you look at your master. Because if he punches his equal, if he turns and just walks away, you have still taken power, haven't you? It's not non-action. That's action. You just took back power. And did you have to use violent means? No. You responded like Christ. And you just took back power. There's more. You know there's more. Well, that's... There we go. If anyone wants to sue you and take your cloak, hand over your tunic as well. This is interesting. Watch this now. In this time period, they had something called taxes. It's really barbaric. And what they would do with these taxes sometimes, and again, this is probably going to sound very foreign to you, but what they would do is sometimes they would take more than you could afford from your income. I know. Praise the Lord, we have evolved. During this time period, however, these people, these Jewish people, what was happening to them is they were taxed so heavily, some of the numbers say 90% of their income was taken. That means 10% of what they had is what they have to live off of. Can you survive like that? And what's even more interesting is it's people from their own tribe that are taxing them the most heavily, the Sadducees. So now think about this. There is this phrase that we've gotten used to. They took the shirt off of my back, right? In this time period, people would sue you when you couldn't pay that. Most of the time it was the religious people or the Sadducees. And they would sue you. And the common phrase that was very much used during this time period was this. They sue you for the cloak off your back. And you'd have to go before the judicial system and you would have to give them even your cloak along with your land and everything else. Now, what's underneath your cloak? That's your tunic. What's under your tunic? Your birthday suit. It's your underwear. That's what your tunic is. Your cloak is the outer garment, and you'd use that for a blanket or a pillow or whatever at night. The tunic is what is keeping everything from being seen. In that culture, nakedness is a shame. It's very shameful nakedness. However, here's the thing. The person who is naked is not the one that's being shamed. It is the one that sees the nakedness. Do you remember the story of Noah? Yeah, Noah's not cursed, it's the sons. And the sons laugh at his nakedness. So watch this now. You are there in the court. And someone is chasing after everything you have. I want your cloak as well. Okay. You take the cloak off. And then you... I hope you can purge that picture out of your mind. You take the tunic off, revealing your nakedness, and you look your accuser in the eye, and you hand them your tunic. Think about that. And they have two options, two choices now. They can take in your nakedness and be shamed in front of everyone, or they can dismiss you. Either way, their actions have just become apparent. And you have just taken back the power. And you did it in a respectful, loving way, non-violently. Jesus says there is another action. Is this good or what? Last one. If anyone forces you to go 1 mile, go with them too. For the Roman soldiers. They had rules and regulations. Rome loved rules and regulations. And here was one of the rules and regulations. Because they saw people as cattle, these people that they were occupying the land, their slaves, you could be walking with your family, and one of them could look at you and say, "You, take my bags, we're going a mile." And you know what you'd have to do? You'd have to go the mile. Now the rule, though, for the Romans was that they can only take you 1 mile. If you go past 1 mile, you are going against the law. And there were actual soldiers who got into trouble for taking people past 1 mile. So watch this. You've been humiliated, been told you're nothing but cattle by your enemy. Walk a mile, carry my stuff, slave. Okay. And you walk the mile. And at the end of the mile, you keep walking. You look at your enemy and you say, "I'm walking another." And you walk. And what happens? Stop, please, just stop. Don't go anymore. You just said two things to him. You said, your humiliation doesn't humiliate. And I can go further. Can you? He would have to stop you or face punishment. You just took back power. And you did it in the Christ way. You took back the power. For many of us, when we face an enemy, someone we disagree with, we usually have two options, don't we? At least in our minds we do. We'll try to seek revenge. That person did me wrong, and I'm going to do everything I can to hurt you. Right? I'm going to gossip about you. I'm going to do certain things that are going to hurt you. I'm going to do everything I can to hurt you because I need my revenge. But if we're going to be honest for one moment, when you finally got your revenge, was it really what you hoped it would be? No, it wasn't. It actually hurt you worse than it did them. And you will carry that for a very long time. The other idea many people go to is this. They'll become a doormat. They just won't react. They won't respond. They'll just let people continue trouncing over top of them, rubbing their feet all over you. And that's not the Christ path either. You were made in God's image. You're not a doormat. You were made in the image of the divine. You have worth. You allowing yourself to become a doormat is not the Christ path. It's never been the Christ path. There's a third option. And that third option is to walk like Christ, to choose to turn the other cheek, to love your enemy. And Jesus closes with this: love your enemies, pray for those who persecute you. It's very easy to wish blessings on people we like, isn't it? I'll pray for you. Try saying that without sounding condescending to the person you don't like. There's a reason why it's hard to get out, isn't it? Can you right now wish blessings on the worst of your enemies? That's what Christ is calling the early church who's being persecuted by both Jews and Gentiles. Can you wish the very best on your enemies? Walking the Christ path is disruptive. It's hard, but always brings life. I'm going to close with this. There's a story. This woman during World War II, actually just before, she and her parents, they were sitting down to dinner. And these soldiers barge into her home. And they murder her mother and father and siblings right before her eyes. And then the soldier, the lieutenant in charge, he looks at her and he decides, "I'm going to take you with me." And what he does is she becomes a slave of sorts. He abuses her in horrific ways for over 2 years. 2 years of this kind of treatment. And she's praying for an escape. And one day it finally comes. She has a moment where she can run away, get away to safety, and she takes it. And she runs, and she doesn't stop running, and she gets free. And we're told her story doesn't stop there. She goes on and frees many Jewish refugees, people who are facing death everywhere they go. She finds ways to free them, and she ends. And the story goes that one day she's at the hospital. And as she's at the hospital, she hears this murmuring going on around the hospital. They just brought in a soldier, a German soldier, a high-ranking German soldier who they're pretty sure has killed a lot of their people. And everyone in this hospital, the murmur is, we're going to let him die. He is not worthy of life. No one wanted to touch this man. And this saint of a woman, she said she walked down the steps into the ward. She was going to dress his wounds. She was going to help restore this man's life. And when she got there over his bed, she had to take a breath. She had to close her eyes for a moment. And she looked down at the man who had abused her all those years. She had a choice. And we're told she dresses the man's wounds. She places the IV in. She helps begin the process of repair and healing for her enemy. And the man recounts this moment. He said, my eyes opened and there I saw her. And I shook and I trembled. He said, is it you? And the woman, all she said was, yes, it's me. She turned and walked away. The Christ path. She turned and walked away. She walked the Christ path. She chose to bring repair, restoration. She chose option three. An option that was not revenge or non-action. She chose to act out of love. Like her Savior. May we learn to choose a different path, the Christ path. May we choose to turn the other cheek, show our humanity in the face of inhumanity, walk the extra mile. May we learn to love our enemies.